Have you ever thought about what really goes into supporting digital scholarship? Well, some may say it takes a village, but here at the University of Illinois, it's bigger than that. It takes a campus. The Scholarly Commons will be interviewing experts across campus about all the new and exciting things that are happening to support digital scholarship. We will sit down with a specialist to learn about what they do, how they do it, and why they got started working in their field. Hear what we mean when we say it takes a campus to do what we do. On this episode, we have Harriet Green as our guest. Harriet was previously the head of the Scholarly Communication and Publishing Unit and the Scholarly Communication and Publishing Librarian at the University of Illinois. She now serves as the Associate University Librarian for the Digital Scholarship and Technology Services Division at Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri. Harriet is interviewed by Billy Tringali. Billy is now the Law Librarian for Outreach at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. Harriet and Billy discuss a few of the resources available at Illinois and offer great insight into the field. Enjoy.
So hello, and welcome to the Scholarly Commons podcast. I'm Billy Tringali, and I'm here with Harriet Green. Harriet, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. And you are the head of Scholarly Communication and Publishing for the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign.
Yes, and Scholarly Communication and Publishing Librarian.
That's fantastic. What a title. That's big.
Yes. And a lot of things in it.
Yes. Do you want to break it down?
Sure. So as head of Scholarly Communication and Publishing, I'm a head of a unit. So we have four full-time librarians, library professionals, plus grad assistants, and we cover different areas of scholarly communication and open access publishing. So my particular expertise is in publishing, scholarly communication, especially for humanities and social sciences, and working with people as they try to use, working with researchers and students as they try to use different tools for sharing their research, doing their research work, and just engaging with their scholarship in different ways.
That is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
That's very cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. So what is scholarly communication? What is the field of scholarly communication? Because you mentioned you mentioned so many things there, and they all fall under this umbrella. How would you describe it?
I envision it as really an ecosystem
Ooh.
Of all the ways that people are talking about their research, sharing it, learning. And traditionally, scholarly communication has been journals, print monographs, print journals, kind of just the printed page across the disciplines, really. But we've really seen in the last few decades, couple decades especially, really in the sciences and then kind of rippling out to the social sciences and the humanities, people using, leveraging technologies, the internet to share their research in different ways. So whether that's blogs or podcasts such as this, online preprints of their articles, all sorts of ways that people, and sharing research data, that's a huge part as well.
Yeah.
So there's many different aspects of how people work with content, work with data, and share that data and communicate with each other about it.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's very cool. Hello, we're engaging in scholarly communication as we speak.
Yes, we are. So it's a really rich field, and there's many, many different areas that all kind of connect into it, whether it's copyright, open access.
Wow.
There's many others. I mean, I can go on.
But please do.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of, you know, really thinking through, and as librarians, how do we, we've all always been involved in scholarly communication from, you know, being the repository of where all the things are held. But now it's not just being a repository, but we have lots and lots of opportunities to work with students, to work with faculty, to work with all sorts of researchers as they're seeking to use the research. So not just helping them find it, but also working with them throughout the research lifecycle.
That's amazing. Yeah. So making sure that they're not just putting something out there that no one's ever going to see.
Right, right. There's many different ways, using our own expertise as information managers and architects of building systems that disseminate information, really opening their eyes to what they can do beyond just printing your paper. What are all the other things that you can do to get people to know about your work?
What are the other things that you
can
do?
In our unit, actually, we support a host of platforms that allow people to at least leverage digital tools to make use of their research for both monographs and journals. So for journals, we support Open Journal Systems, which is a open source platform. It's widely used around the world. It's out of Simon Fraser University in British Columbia and the PKP project, the Public Knowledge Project.
Ooh.
And that actually is a great organization that we're a member of, which builds these kind of open source scholarly communication platforms.
That's amazing.
And so we're using both their Open Journal Systems platform to help people who want to do open access journals.
Yeah.
We're looking to pilot a couple journals, and we already work with undergraduate research journals. And
wow.
Those have been hosted on OGS for the past couple years. And that's an initiative led by Marinda Hensley
yes.
in the Scholarly Commons. And so that's one platform. And then for journals
yeah.
and then for books, or books in quotes, which can be a whole host of things, we support Omeka, which allows people to do digital exhibitions.
Wow.
So if you want to showcase images, audio, video, in an exhibition-type platform. Scalar, which allows people to do nonlinear books.
Wow.
So people can, again, interconnect all sorts of materials and their texts in different ways to really have a dynamic, interactive publication. And then Pressbooks, which looks like a pretty straightforward typeset PDF.
Yeah.
But again, allows people to read a book online in a really clean format, like an ebook.
Wow.
And then Commons in a Box. And that's a new platform developed at the City University of New York, CUNY.
Yeah.
And it's actually kind of like a social network for academics.
Wow.
So you can mount this platform, the Commons in a Box.
Yeah.
And then research groups can have their own discussion forums, their own WordPress sites.
Wow.
And so that's kind of another aspect of scholarly communication, not just publishing, but also how do you work together? How do you collaborate? And how are you sharing your data? How are you sharing your documentation? And can you see the research happening live? And so Commons in a Box and the CUNY Academic Commons is a great thing that we're going to try to start here
yeah.
In Illinois, allows research groups, student group, faculty groups to engage in that way too.
That's huge. That's amazing.
Yeah. So
and you mentioned all the way down to undergraduates.
Yes, yes. So we've actually been perhaps the most visible work has been with undergraduates thus far
wow.
with the research journals. And then also in my earlier work, I've worked with undergraduates as they've built Omeka sites, as they've built Scalar sites
incredible.
For their class projects. So and that's something that's interesting as faculty members and teachers are really looking to kind of break open the ways that students are doing work. These platforms offer a way for students to really do some cool work, but also engage in what they're researching and bringing together, say, video clips of a movie and then doing a, you know, film analysis of that video clip.
That's incredible.
You know, or doing one group I worked with, they did video blogs and then they put their video blogs on the site and then they did their whole, basically kind of their paper on
That's
kind of,
so cool.
It was about youth activism and they did a blog about it. So there's all these things that students are really able to dive in.
That's amazing.
So that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, wow.
and things that are happening here in Illinois, and then if you look across the country, there's so many other things that people are doing, students and faculty are doing.
Wow.
To do these kind of very dynamic, interactive ways of showing their research.
This is a huge field.
It is. There's areas that I probably have no time, but like with copyright and with institutional repositories is the other aspect that we cover here.
Yeah.
So that's in my department. It's called IDEALS.
Wow.
And that allows people to post articles, post your posters, anything that you've produced, and you want it to be preserved in a long-term fashion, you can host it in our institutional repository.
Wow.
And that's actually the other piece that we've had for a long time, since almost 10 years ago, 10 years I think now, of having an institutional repository
wow.
where people can do open access publishing to a certain extent by putting your articles up there.
That's incredible.
And now we have a mandate on campus
Ooh.
To strongly encourage faculty to make their work open access. So we had IDEALS, and then only the last couple of years have we had a mandate to really encourage people to do it.
Yeah.
But still very, very, very much a work in progress.
Wow.
So those are kind of like the big elements of what we've been doing or what we have. But so we have like elements that have existed, and now we're trying to really build a more coherent program
yeah.
here at the library that really builds upon the great work that, you know, my predecessors and other librarians have done.
And I think it's when people think of libraries, I don't think that they'd often think of publishing or communication
no.
even.
No. And I mean, there's still a debate out there. Should
really?
Libraries be involved in this kind of work? But we're seeing, and it's still very new. It's only, I'd say, in the last 10 years that
wow.
you really see libraries doing publishing,
yeah.
building repositories, institutional repositories. And there's been some pioneers like Michigan. University of Michigan's been doing this work for a while.
Wow.
And I think University of Virginia's been doing quite a bit of work for the last couple of decades
yeah.
as well. But on the whole, it's still very new. But we see that there's this gray area where you have, you know, university presses, which is where faculty are trying to publish their books
right.
so they can get tenure.
Yes.
And commercial publishers like Random House or Simon Schuster, which is also another way people sometimes share scholarship.
Yeah.
But there's a big gap between getting your book with the university press or getting your article in a super, super prestigious journal that takes 2 years to come out, and all this work that's going on constantly.
Yeah.
And so people, at the very minimum, we've seen both, you know, just here in my own work and also across the country, that faculty and students are looking for more agile, quicker ways to share their work.
Right.
And so it's not just the super finished product that's a book or a, you know, nice journal, but also, you know, maybe work in progress, maybe putting a preprint up there so that you could, people can see, oh, here's an early version of the article, or getting the work out there with the audio and the art images that you used and getting it up there a lot faster than, again, waiting for that book with the flat images on there 3 years down the road.
Right.
So we see that there's this whole world of scholarship that wants to be shared.
Yeah.
And in the digital age we're in now, you know, we expect things, you know, things are tweeted every millisecond.
Exactly.
People are blogging every day. And when you compare that to, you know, the 4 years it takes to put out a book, or especially in the humanities, taking 2 years from a journal to, you know, submitting your article to even seeing it in print, that's, you know, there's a whole realm of things that should be happening in between that space. And libraries have the agility, we have the infrastructure to really support digital publishing and different ways of engaging in scholarship in faster ways.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
And it's evolving, but it's something that we're seeing a need for, and I think it's continuing. And there's quite a bit of literature out there as well. A recent report from the Association of Research Libraries just put out a report about libraries and publishing and presses that I encourage people to read. It's a spec kit number 357.
Wow.
And so that one has a lot of good data, really recent data, on what's happening as well.
Now, you've mentioned open access, the speed of publishing and libraries' role in that. Mm-hmm. What would you say is currently the biggest issue in the field of scholarly communication?
Well, when I'm thinking about this, I might say, you know, there was a whole, with open access, the big thing was like this very activist, like, we're going to make all the information free.
Yeah.
It's going to be out there. We need to liberate the information. But now there's nuances to that. And we're now realizing, you know, everything from concerns of different disciplines, you know, the ways they work in terms of being able to expose patents or expose different types of data. How do we honor, you know, medical data and HIPAA data that might be embedded in that? And that there are ways around that as well. But also thinking about, you know, indigenous cultures and, you know, making information free, making open data free. Well, you know, what are the cultural ramifications of that as well?
Right.
If you're dealing, especially in anthropology, sociology, some of the social sciences that are dealing with cultures and ethnicities, where you have to be context of where is this data coming from?
Yeah.
How are we sharing the scholarship? So I think as we're grappling with that, and how to really both expose the broadest range of scholarship, but also honor and really take into account the ethics of data, the ethics of cultures that we're working with as we do our scholarship.
Wow.
And then also with impact. And I think a struggle with this, as scholars are engaging in new forms of scholarship, how do they show the impact of their work?
Yes.
And it's not, it can't just be, you know, five people tweeted about my work, but how do you convey that to a tenure committee?
Right.
And so there's this tension of, we want to encourage scholars, encourage students to, you know, try new digital tools, try these new ways of publishing and sharing scholarship. But at the same time, how can we help them still advance in their own careers?
Right.
Or how can they,
right,
you know, still get tenure and still advance the academy through these still very traditional means?
Right.
So I think the ways of the workings of the academy and the way scholarship is happening, there's still a tension. There's still, and you know, that's something that we've had to already confront, is, you know, as we try to, you know, bring people in to work with us, helping address all their needs, because this is a very real need alongside, you know, the equally valid pressing need of making information free is, but, you know, what are all the contexts?
Right.
And how do we make sure that everybody can participate in this ecosystem?
Yeah.
And still be able to meet the needs that they have?
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It does. But I love that description, ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's more and more. It's not just one thing or another. But there's lots of players. There's lots of parts. And there's no, and it really depends on the context you're working in.
Yeah.
Us at a research university is very different from, you know, the small liberal arts college, like, you know, Illinois College down the road.
Right.
There's two, you know, there's so many different factors.
Yeah.
That are involved.
So within this ecosystem, mm-hmm. I'm sure that we've talked about everything from undergraduates to graduate students to faculty to librarians. What should varieties of people know about this field? What should students know?
I think it's behooves students to be aware of where you're getting information. There's, you know, when you click on to download a journal article, knowing, you know, what's behind that, you know, that the library paid $20,000
right.
to get you that article to you, or where is that book coming from? If it's coming from interlibrary loan, realize there's a whole system of people and money that's behind that, getting that book to you and shipped to you. And so I think both students and, you know, even faculty, you know, being aware of where this information is coming from. It isn't free.
Right.
There's a lot of different infrastructure behind that, and both appreciating it, but also advocating for ways to make it more free. So when we talk about open access, that requires on the part of students and faculty being willing to make their scholarship open so that maybe librarians don't have to pay as much, and maybe your best friend who doesn't go to a school that has as many resources as Illinois, they don't have to beg you to send it, but they rather, which we're aware that that happens, but rather everybody has equal access to the information.
Right.
So that's one thing I would say is, you know, students just being aware of where your research is coming from, where you're getting information, and then, you know, ways that they can participate.
Right.
And then, you know, along those lines, like with educators, especially faculty who publish and researchers who publish, being aware of your author's rights. That's another issue.
Wow.
That's a big issue in scholarly communications.
Yeah.
And yeah, that might go as one of the bigger issues in the field as well. But making people aware of their copyrights and that, you know, all too many publishers, when you sign the standard agreement, you basically are like, oh, here have my entire thing and you can do whatever you want with it.
Right.
You don't have to sign that.
Oh.
You can just tell them they just need, and as Sarah has told you.
Yes, Sarah's been on the program.
Copyright is a bundle of rights.
It is.
And she says it in much more expert detail. So I'll let listeners listen to that episode. But it's, you know, being discerning of how you give up your copyright,
right.
You know, what your scholarship is being used for, where is it going?
Yeah.
And just, you know, that's a thing that we're really trying to do in my department is really educate researchers on their rights, what they can claim, what they should retain, and and how to really, you know, retain their scholarship and their intellectual property.
Right.
So that's something that I think anybody who wants to engage in scholarship should know.
Definitely. Know what you're signing up for
when
you get into that huge journal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then also as you're creating stuff, you know, fair use. So, you know, we have, especially in the education realm, you know, the ability to use pieces of music and art and literature within our works as part of fair use. And, you know, there's many different bills through Congress and the Mickey Mouse Act that really are all about claiming copyright to the fullest extent when there are ways that we can use and remix work. So this is in no way any kind of advice, but, you know, people should be aware of fair use, basically, and don't be afraid to employ it if you're, you know, doing work and creating work.
Yeah.
Now, there are guidelines, there are parameters, and there's a great checklist on our website, the copyright guide for the fair use checklist. And that's a really good way of ascertaining, you know, are you within the bounds of fair use? So there there are guidelines, but, you know, don't be afraid to use it as well.
Yeah.
And so I would say that for students and creators and researchers.
That's fantastic.
And then, you know, with librarians and information professionals, I think, you know, nowadays, I think every information professional really should know more about copyright and scholarly communications issues.
Definitely.
Because especially as we're helping people, you know, whether you're in a special library with a, you know, working in a law firm or something, or you're working at the reference desk, people are coming to us more and more with these questions of how, what can they use? How can they share their own work? And there's basic levels of education that I think everybody really needs to know, especially if you work in the information profession.
Yeah, and that we'd all benefit from.
And so it's, and there's more and more materials out there. You know, the Creative Commons has a new curriculum coming out that they just got IMLS funding for, that's going to be a resource.
Yeah.
And then my unit, a couple people were doing the library publishing curriculum, which is another IMLS project, and we're participating in that. And that's another way for people to learn more about all the ins and outs as well.
Wow.
So there's more and more materials out there that people can self-educate as well as learn from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's plenty of information. Right. There's always ways to learn.
Always.
It Takes a Campus is a podcast brought to you by the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign's Scholarly Commons, located in the main library. If you want more from us, be sure to check out our blog, Commons Knowledge, at publish.illinois.edu/commonsknowledge, and follow us on Twitter at Schol Commons. That's S-C-H-O-L Commons. The opening and closing song is Tranquility Base by AAA Alto. You can find their album Bright Colors in the Free Music Archive by searching for AAA Alto at freemusicarchive.org. Thanks for listening.